Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Glad to be with you this Thursday, November 7th. As we're continuing our conversation on topics in youth, what's going on with youth in our church body today and youth in our country and around the globe, really? What's going on with them? What are the things that interest them? What are they involved in and what are they not involved in, especially when it comes to matters of faith and spirituality and life? We're going to get to that here in just a little bit. Our first guest we're going to talk with from the Lutherans for Life organization, Lutherans for Life Conference. It's coming up actually tomorrow. So we're going to talk about that in just a moment. I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting this program. If you'd like to find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin, just go to our website, KFUO.org. Look for the sponsor section. Click on the CUW logo in the sponsor section, and that'll take you to their page. You find out all about the great programs they have to offer and the locations where Concordia University, Wisconsin is available, not just in Wisconsin. So go check it out, KFUO.org. If you'd like to join the conversation today, if you have a question about the topics that we're discussing related to youth, you're welcome to join the conversation. If you have a question or comment, give us a call here in the studio. In St. Louis, it's 314-821-0850. Outside of St. Louis, 1-800-730-2727. Or you can email your questions or comments to family@kfuo.org. Well, joining us by phone this morning is Laura Davis, Director of Y for Life at Lutherans for Life. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning.
And it is really morning where you are, correct? You are in Arizona, is that correct?
No, we are in Iowa.
Iowa. Okay, you are in Iowa.
Yes.
Wonderful. All right. I was thinking for some reason you were back out west. Now, I knew the conference was in Iowa, so you are close to Des Moines, correct?
Yes. Our headquarters are in Nevada, Iowa, which is about an hour away from Des Moines, about an hour north. So.
Excellent. That's what it was. I saw Nevada and thought Nevada.
Yes.
That's why I was putting you back out west. So the Lutherans for Life National Conference, it starts on the 8th tomorrow, and
yes.
A lot of great things on the lineup, and including some great things for youth. Before we even get into those things, I want to talk about your work, Y for Life, and what is Y for Life?
Y for Life is the youth and young adult program at Lutherans for Life, and it was really started to help youth answer that question, why be for life? We talk about it a lot in church. Lutherans for Life works with churches to help them answer that question, but we really saw that there was a gap. Youth needed to figure out how to answer that question themselves. So we use a combination of education and service projects to help youth really understand what it means to be for life and how they can actually live that out, how they can serve their community and how they can actually make a difference.
And you're the director of Y for Life. How long have you been with Lutherans for Life and how did you, what's your background?
Yes, I've been with Lutherans for Life since summer of 2012. We announced Y for Life as a program last December, so we're only about a year old. We're still learning and still growing. I'm the daughter of a pastor from Texas, and I started getting involved with Life Ministries when I was in college. I got connected with 40 Days for Life program at Texas A&M University. And learned that the people who were working for life were passionate and loving. They were there to support people and to show them alternatives, to show them a different way. And the more and more I learned, the more excited I got about actually doing that for a living. I decided to go into nonprofits and was connected with the Lutherans for Life in 2011, was elected to their board of directors. And then from there, God decided to take that a little farther, and I was hired the next year. So it's been a wonderful couple of years, and I'm so excited to continue to learn and grow with these people.
Wonderful. And great to hear that Lutherans for Life has now provided some a channel or a means for connecting with our young people to help them ask those questions. Why am I for life? Why should I be for life? And coming up in the next segment, in the second segment, we're also going to talk with Reverend Stephen Cholak from LCMS Youth Ministry about various topics in youth as well, especially when it comes to matters of faith and spirituality. So I think we've got a lot of good things to talk about today. When it comes to the conference, what kinds of things are available for youth at the Lutherans for Life conference? What are the types of things that are there to engage youth?
Yes, this year we have a youth track, a Y for Life youth track for ages high school and up, so high school and college students. We actually have 28 registered, which is more youth than we've had in the past. Very excited. I think it's 12 high school and 16 college students, so a wonderful number. We're going to start tomorrow afternoon with some life training with them. So we'll teach them, it's a program adapted from the Making Abortion Unthinkable program, and it helps kids come up with a solid scientific and philosophic argument for why they should be for life. Gives them the tools to actually talk to their peers about that, whether they're at a Christian school or whether they're at a public school. It gives them that opportunity to make their arguments. So we'll start with that. We'll do some team building, get to know each other a little better. Then we'll do a movie night tomorrow night. We'll watch October Baby, which is a wonderful life-affirming film that came out a couple years ago. And then Saturday, we've got even more going on for them. We'll do a workshop about sidewalk counseling and other opportunities to get involved in their area. And then in the afternoon, we'll actually do a servant event. So we're going to take the students around the Des Moines area to different life-affirming ministries. We'll start by going out and doing a sidewalk vigil at a Planned Parenthood location in Urbandale.
Wow.
And we'll show them what sidewalk counseling looks like and really emphasize the reality of what's going on, that it's not an abstract concept, that it's not just something you hear about, that it's actually happening 10 minutes from where we're having this conference. Then we'll go down to a pregnancy center in Des Moines. It's called Agape Pregnancy Center, and it was actually started by many LFL volunteers several years ago. Were very influential in getting this center started, and I love hearing their stories. So we figured we'd go full circle and go and serve there as well, and the kids will be involved in a service project to help them as they serve the women of Des Moines. So.
Lots of opportunities to serve, it sounds like.
Plenty
of opportunities to get out there. And by serving, also learning in those situations. When you were talking about the sidewalk counseling, some might think, you know, when you hear that as a parent, you might hear, my high school student going out there and talking with people on the street. Is there danger? Is there risk involved?
Right.
That's a legitimate question a parent might have. How would you respond to that question?
Well, the students will not be sidewalk counseling this time. I've been a sidewalk counselor for about 5 years now, and it took me a long time before I was comfortable and knowledgeable enough to actually engage in conversation. So the students will just be observing, but it's very safe. I've been out on sidewalks across the country. As long as you follow the rules, you find out the area, what you're doing, where you can be, it's very safe. We've never had any incidents with sidewalk counseling, but they'll just be observing this time. And then hopefully, as they learn more, they'll get involved in their own area. Like I said, I started sidewalk counseling in college. I know some people who start sooner than that. So it's very safe as long as you're smart about it and as long as you do it in a loving, non-judgmental way. We're not there to yell at anyone. We're not there to get upset with anyone. We're there to just offer alternatives and love, the love of Christ.
And what does that, you said going through training, when you went through that training, then you became a sidewalk counselor. What does that look like? What is a regular sidewalk counseling look like?
It depends where you're at. I was trained through the Coalition for Life in Bryan, Texas, and they have a whole program. But it really depends on where you're at. Different cities have different ways of doing it. They have maybe they have an organization or they just have volunteers that help train people. But basically, what it looks like is when someone's walking into the clinic, we have information available to them. And so we simply say, we have free resources available for you. Would you like information about other clinics you can go to, other healthcare opportunities? We're here to help you. It's very simple. And then when they come and speak to you, you hand them the information, and if they have any more questions, you answer them as they come. So,
excellent. We're talking with Laura Davis, Director of Y for Life at Lutherans for Life, talking about the upcoming conference that begins tomorrow in the Des Moines area, Des Moines, Iowa. And if you have a question for Laura about the youth opportunities in Y for Life at Lutherans for Life, give us a call here in the St. Louis area. It's 314-821-0850. Outside of St. Louis, 1-800-730-2727, or you can email your questions to family@kfuo.org. Now, Laura, attending a conference, quite often the big question that parents and sometimes church workers and others ask, when youth attend a conference, how long is this going to last after they leave the conference? What are they going to take with them, and how long is it going to last? What are they going to take home with them for what they've learned to really stay with them?
Well, we have ongoing programs other than the conference, so there's that. I'm here as an ongoing support to youth who have questions, who have needs when dealing with life issues. I also think that the education that's included in this conference allows them to build off of that after they go home. Like I said, the training we'll do on Friday really helps build that argument, that base for them with the knowledge to actually engage in conversation with their peers. They can build off of that. The servant event will introduce them to the kind of opportunities for service that are in their community as well. Most communities have a pregnancy center. Most will accept volunteers. So introducing them to those opportunities lets them know there is something they can do, and it doesn't just have to be at a conference. One of our ongoing programs is a servant event program, where we'll go into a community, into a town or a city that's willing to host us, and we'll lead one of these servant events over the weekend. And we'll actually introduce students to those service opportunities in their own town, in their own community, so that there's a foundation built for future service.
That's great, especially for them to see how this can be done right at home, right in their own backyard, and how they can serve right in their own backyard. While it's great to be able to go across the country, around the globe, there are opportunities wide open right in our own backyards, right next door, and that's great. At the conference, I know you said that, you know, we have the youth track at the conference, the Y for Life track. Will there be opportunities for the youth to interact with the adults in the conference as well? What types of settings will youth and adults interact together?
Absolutely. We felt that was very important when having a youth track, to still have the students as part of the whole conference. We don't want it to be a separate program. We feel it's very important to have that intergenerational ministry going on. So students will actually participate fully in the evening activities on Friday night. The training we'll be doing with them is a pre-conference workshop, so it's before the actual activities begin. So Friday night we'll be all together at the banquets and the keynotes. Actually, President Harrison will be our keynote speaker Friday evening. And then on Saturday, they'll also participate fully in the morning activities. So they'll be able to attend a regular workshop. They've been able to register for the one they wanted, and the breakfast and that kind of thing. So it will be a mix of both the regular conference experience and some special time for them to learn and grow together.
Excellent. Well, for someone who is thinking about it's too late for us to get in on the conference this year, but maybe a parent or a youth leader or a church worker is thinking, this is something that would really be helpful for our youth in the, you know, maybe in the future. What do you have to offer? What can they think of, you know, or start planning for down the road?
Absolutely. We would love to host a servant event if that's something they're interested in. We have already talking with a couple different cities for next year, but we will be happy to add more. They just have to contact me at my email or my phone number, which I can give to you, and we'd be happy to set that up for them. We also have a Washington, D.C. trip every year, and it's not too late to sign up. We take a group of high schoolers and college students to Washington, D.C. for the March for Life and also for the Students for Life of America Conference, which is a wonderful educational opportunity to learn about defending life and also getting to connect with other students from around the country who feel the same way. That's in January. January 19th is when we're leaving, and it's not too late. If they go to yforlife.org, the registration is still available, but we only have 4 spots left. So,
only 4 spots.
Only 4 spots.
Well, I think they just filled up.
There we go.
Yforlife.org. And yes. Okay, well, we'll link to that today as well from our program. We'll link to the Y for Life page, so that the website, so that folks can find out more about it. Other resources that you might point parents, youth, or congregations to when it comes to Y for Life and being for life.
Absolutely. Our website has so many materials available and resources. Lutherans for Life is really one of the experts in for life materials, and we've got so much available to them. So if they check out our website, there's YouTube videos, there's Bible studies, things like that that are available for churches to use. We also have a wonderful speakers bureau. Besides myself, we have people all over the country that can come and speak to your students, speak to your congregation about life issues, and really engage them on the topic. So there's a lot available if they go visit our website.
Excellent. Yeah, checking it out, there are some great things. Media, pretty cool. LifeTube. Tell me a little bit about LifeTube.
LifeTube is our YouTube channel, and we have lots of videos available. Many times Dr. Lamb, our executive director, will record his presentations. Those go up on LifeTube. Every time we prepare another video, it goes on there. So for a variety of topics from the beginning to the end of life, those videos are available to use in a Sunday school setting or at a different special event, things like that. So feel free to check it out.
Cool. Neat stuff on there. And we just talked with Mark Laverty not too long ago about life teams. Is this something that youth, you know, high school teens and college students could be a part of as well?
Absolutely. We are currently working on a plan to expand life teams and life ministry to our Lutheran campuses around the country. There are currently two life ministries on Concordia University campuses, one Students for Life at Concordia, Wisconsin, and then Bulldogs for the Unborn at Concordia, Nebraska. And both of these groups are doing wonderful work in their community, in their school, on their campus. And I'm working with leadership from both of those groups to work on expanding it to our other Concordia campuses, and we'll be announcing that program very shortly. We also have working with high school students to get them having life ministries on their campus. There's already a great one in St. Charles, Missouri, at Lutheran High School St. Charles, and that's actually the group we go to D.C. with. So these student groups can make a huge difference on their campus, just like you'd have an organization, a student organization for art club or math club. You have your life club, and they help promote life on their campus and that biblical view of the beauty of life and what God has created.
Excellent. When it comes to youth and their view of life being for life, what are some of the common misconceptions that youth have today about life and life issues? Are there common misconceptions among youth?
I think the most common misconception is that by saying you're for life, you're somehow judging another individual. I think we're seeing this more and more. We call it the modified pro-choice position, where you say, I'm for life, I'm personally pro-life, but I can't tell other people that. Where they think somehow they're being judgmental if they take a stand. And so we really encourage them that they're not being judgmental, that it's okay to share that something is a sin, because that gives us an opportunity to share the gospel. So that's one of the more common misconceptions I see. But it's very encouraging as well to see our generation, to see that younger generation really rise up and take a leadership role in this movement. We're seeing more and more for-life youth getting involved, making a difference, taking a stand, and we're actually starting to see those numbers rise. All the surveys show that this generation is much more for-life than the one before them, which is very encouraging.
Interesting. And we'll probably get into that even more so with Pastor Cholak in the second segment about some of the trends and statistics among youth and when it comes to those matters of faith and life and spirituality. Any interesting stories from some of your youth? You said, you know, that Y for Life is fairly new, about a year old. Any great stories from just the past year?
Absolutely. We had our first servant event, our pilot program, in St. Louis in April, and it was small. We only had six students attend, but it was a wonderful opportunity to connect with those six students and really learn and grow with them. We had one student who had only been going to church for a few months. She was new to Christianity, new to the whole concept, and she just really took to what we were doing, was very impressed by the service we were doing and the people we met with. We worked with Thrive Pregnancy Center in St. Louis and Laclede Grove Senior Center, part of Lutheran Senior Services. And she was really impressed. And she actually, we have a great interview. It's on our LifeTube channel, on our YouTube channel, where she says this is what she wants to do. She wants to further herself in supporting and helping women that are facing this so that they know they're loved. And that was just wonderful for me to see someone who was even new to the concept of Jesus really embracing how life issues can be an opportunity to share love with one another.
I'm glad that you mentioned the senior center. Quite often, especially I'm guessing with youth, quite often when we think of being for life, we think of babies and abortion. But there are other topics that are other issues that are just as important when you're for life. So I'm glad that you mentioned the senior center. Any other opportunities or experiences for young people? You know, I know you talked about the sidewalk counseling, but what about that end of life? The end of life, the older folks, and or those who might be sick or ill with life threatening illnesses or diseases.
Absolutely. In my experience, the older generation loves seeing young people excited about service and about God. And so we took this Serve in a Event group to the senior center, and we actually just played bingo for about an hour and a half with the residents there. And it was amazing to see some of these students really open up, interact, get to know each other, have wonderful conversations with the residents there, and really embrace that this might be their spiritual gift, working with the elderly, working with those who might not understand or might not hear enough how loved and precious they are to God, no matter what their age is. And that's something that youth can do any time. You don't have to be part of a Wife for Life servant event to go volunteer at a senior center or a place like that. There are volunteer opportunities all over the place for them. And
sure,
I would encourage them to look into that if they feel like that might be what God is calling them to.
You can do that. That's part of our life together as Lutherans, is caring for our brothers and sisters of all ages. And yeah, you're right. You can do that in your own neighborhood. There are LSS communities all over the place. There are just lots of opportunities to connect with older members of our congregations. Quite often we have a lot of shut-ins who don't get enough visits from members of the congregation, from their brothers and sisters in Christ. What a great way to do that and to affirm life.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, let's take a look again at the resources that you were talking about. The whyforlife.org website, is that correct?
Yes.
Whyforlife.org. We'll link to that from our website today. And anything else? You mentioned there was another event coming up, the DC trip, I believe it was.
Yes, we have a DC trip, and we're leaving registration open for about another week and a half, and then we'll have to cut it off. So if there's anyone interested, give me my contact information's on the website. Give me a call. I can tell you all about that, or there's an information sheet on our website as well.
Excellent. We've been talking with Laura Davis, Director of Why for Life at Lutherans for Life, and about the upcoming conference that starts tomorrow, the Lutherans for Life conference with the Why for Life track. Thanks so much for spending some time today talking with us, Laura. It's been good visiting with you.
Thank you. My pleasure.
God's blessings.
You too.
Coming up in the next segment, we're going to talk with Pastor Stephen Cholak from LCMS Youth Ministry about when it comes to youth, where are they? What are the trends when it comes to spirituality, matters of faith? All next, right here on Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute. some people are into jogging. Not me. It makes the ice slosh right out of my iced tea. But Keelan Glass is in a league all her own. She's only 6 years old and is the youngest person to finish a half marathon in less than 3 hours. For all the non-runners among us, that's 13 miles. Keelan ran with her mother, Tracy, as part of Life Runners, the world's largest pro-life running group. Not only did Keelan set a world record, she raised nearly $3,000 for Pregnancy Resources of Abilene, Texas. It provides life-affirming alternatives to women with unexpected pregnancies. I have no doubt this pint-sized runner would leave me in the dust when it came to running. And she's got a leg up on many others by raising money to save unborn babies from abortion.
Life issues. Stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
Hi, I'm Mark Hawkinson, extending a warm invitation for you to join me for Moments of Assurance each weekday from noon to 1 p.m. on Worldwide KFUO. Each day I'll share scriptural encouragement along with practical thoughts, humor, trivia, news items, wonderful Christ-centered songs and hymns. It's a great spiritual recipe for your noontime hour. So join me, won't you? That's Moments of Assurance, underwritten in part by Mid-American Coaches and Children's Christian Concern Society, an LCMS recognized service organization.
This is John Fuller for Focus on the Family. Coming up this weekend, using different languages of love in your marriage. How moms can powerfully influence their sons. And a heartwarming story about cheering for the underdog. Learn more on the next Weekend Magazine.
Saturday mornings at 10 on KFUO.
Hi, I'm Pastor Ted Lesh, pastor at Chapel of the Cross Lutheran Church in North St. Louis County, inviting you to listen to our KFUO radio worship broadcasts on Sunday evenings at 6 o'clock. Active worship, preaching, music, and singing are part of every one of our services at Chapel. Join us Sunday nights at 6. It's one more broadcast worship opportunity for you from your friends at Chapel of the Cross and KFUO Radio.
The U.S. Supreme Court is wrestling with the appropriate role for religion in government in a case involving prayers at the start of a town's council meetings. The court heard arguments over whether the town of Greece, New York, violated the Constitution because nearly every prayer in an 11-year span was Christian. Plaintiff Susan Galloway says she's Jewish and
it makes you very uncomfortable.
Aisha Khan of Americans United for Separation of Church and State says prayer should be non-sectarian.
Our national motto is "In God We Trust." Not in Christ we trust.
But Professor Wayne House of Faith Evangelical College and Seminary says,
to demand some supposed neutral prayer is to strike at the core of religion itself.
The tenor of the argument suggested the justices won't agree with an appeals court that found the prayers unconstitutional. Ken Klukowski of the Family Research Council says,
we're very pleased with how argument went,
but it's unclear what decision the justices might come to instead. I'm Steve Coleman.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. It is Thursday, November 7th. Joining me in the studio, Reverend Stephen Cholak from LCMS Office of Youth Ministry, or LCMS Youth Ministry. It's not afternoon. Good morning, Pastor Cholak.
Good morning. It's great to be with you, Andy.
For me, it's afternoon.
Yes.
But for some of our listeners today, it is. So tell us a little bit about what you do in LCMS Youth Ministry.
Yes, definitely. I'm the special ministries coordinator for our department, and that entails looking after a number of special projects that are new to our area, and as we roll them out and start looking at opportunities to pair them to other things in the Office of National Mission and sometimes internationally as well. And I have five specific areas. The first one, I think your guest yesterday was Marcus Zill.
Yes. Yeah.
Zill is our coordinator for LCMSU, our Campus Ministry Initiative, and so I help him. I'm his eyes and ears and stuff in the building here at the International Center. So,
uh-oh.
Yeah. And we have two assistant coordinators, too, that help in that that really crucial work.
Yeah.
So LCMSU is our first area that I've been helping with. Second is Lutheran Youth Corps, which is long-term servant event mercy work for young adults. Which we're hoping to have pilot programs in place early next year, probably February-ish.
That would be splendid. I know I keep bothering your office for more information on that.
Yes, it's very exciting. Third is church worker recruitment and retention. So looking at how do we continue to encourage our young people to be church workers, and then how do we keep the ones that we have healthy and wealthy and wise, so to speak. So what can we do in those areas? Third is outreach and evangelism to youth. Fourth is, I don't know if I have my numbering right, but youth catechesis. So those are our areas.
Youth catechesis.
Mm-hmm.
All good stuff. With that many different things on your desk, does it get confusing?
Sometimes, maybe.
I'm not going to say it on the air.
You know, at first glance, when I was looking at the job description before I even had applied, it looked really jumbled in a lot of different things. But the longer that I'm actually in the position, the more I see the interconnection and how important they all are to our department and how they feed off of each other. So it's been really exciting.
So everything you do relates to youth and their connection to the church, their connection to the rest of the body of Christ. What you and I had a conversation over the last few days, just brief conversation about some trends among youth and just various topics in youth. We were looking at a couple of books. One of them was Christian Smith's book on his research. He's a professor of sociology at the University of Notre Dame. And his book is Soul Searching, The Religious and Spiritual Lives of American Teenagers. And that was one of the books that we were talking about. I know you have another book from Kinnaman, the You Lost Me book, which is very related to the same topic and the same text. What's going on when it comes to, what are trends, what are common things that we see among youth in America?
Yeah, the main sort of basis for Christian Smith's book was the National Survey for Youth and Religion, and he went out and surveyed a number of youth from all over the country. He made sure to spread out and go to various areas and ask a number of questions, did some one-on-one interviews that were a little bit more in-depth in some places, but had a set sort of, I don't know, group of questions that he used, and then went back and scientifically looked at that once he had the right number, and came to some conclusions about where our youth are. And there are 11.
What was it he was trying to get at? What was it he was trying to understand?
Yeah, I think it's the pulse of where our youth are as far as religion is concerned to culture and compared to their parents.
Interesting comparison.
Mm-hmm.
Quite often we look at, in our culture, we look at youth in an isolated view. We don't necessarily compare them to their parents. So what were some of the things that he found that you find interesting, or what are some of the things that you've been reading about that you found interesting?
Yeah. Here's just some top ones that I just find just really cool. Most U.S. teenagers embrace some religious identity and are affiliated with a religious organization. So this idea, maybe the postmodern idea or our, you know, generational studies, and we're looking at this new generation, which some people are calling mosaics, nexters or whatever you call it, after the millennials. we sort of had this idea that they're just these free floating, maybe spiritual, but, you know, they're embracing a scientific kind of side rather than a religious side. And he found that's completely not the case. That most teenagers are religious in some way. And not that they're just a free-floating religious entity, but that they're affiliated with an organization. So that's interesting.
They're affiliated with some sort of organized religion.
Exactly.
Hmm. Yeah. Interesting.
Very. And that, I mean, that's another thing. I've seen a number of bumper stickers in my life of, I love Jesus, but I hate organized religion.
Sure. And we hear lots of, I'm spiritual, but not religious.
Right. Yeah. And what does that even mean?
Right. How can one be spiritual and not religious? Anyway.
Here's another striking one. Most U.S. teenagers follow their parents' footsteps when it comes to religion.
Or non-religion.
Right. So, and he found this almost lock, stock, and barrel, that as you looked at the parents, and that's the other nuance to this survey. He didn't just interview the kids. He interviewed their parents as well. And he found that most likely if a parent was a certain way, their kids were exactly the same way.
Wow. And that's just the majority. That's not necessarily all
right.
of teens, but the
majority of them. Uh-huh. Most, he said, too.
That speaks volumes.
Uh-huh. It's striking.
Yeah, especially considering the New Testament reading from yesterday, I believe it was, when we were talking about the Pharisees, do as they say, not as they do.
Right.
And quite often we hear parents, you know, touting that as well. Do as I say, not as I do. But parents really do influence by their actions just as much as their words.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is the content of that? That's an entirely different thing, which we'll get to later, I hope. But yeah, they follow in footstep, you know, in a march with their parents.
Hmm.
I'll just do one more. While most U.S. teenagers feel generally positive toward religion, it's not a big deal to them. So, whereas they follow their parents, most of them are religious. They are associated with a religious organization. It's just something about them. It's not the thing about them.
So it's just an aspect of my life, but it's not necessarily the majority. It's not a serious part of my identity.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Now, and the other thing to keep in mind here is he's interviewing all teenagers, all spectrums of the you know, religious environment. So he's got Protestants, Catholics, Mormons, Hindus, Buddhists, Muslims, and so forth. So he's getting the whole gamut. Now, he did get then in and to a second layer where he looked at specific religions or specific denominations. And if I could just add one statistic.
Sure.
Relative to the LCMS, that according to this survey, the LCMS is among a group of church bodies that retains 86% of its high school youth through high school.
Through high school.
Right. And that's phenomenal.
I would challenge that.
So, not necessarily from baptism to high school, but from confirmation to graduation of senior year.
Hmm.
So, our issue and where we're seeing a lot of statistically problematic areas is between baptism and confirmation and once they leave for college. And Christian Smith is going to see that too, that really the issue is when you get to college. And perhaps that's because you don't have your parents right there with you anymore. That's the sort of time in your life when you're adventurous, so to speak, or you're influenced now by your peers rather than that, or your own peers, the peers that you create for yourself rather than the ones that your parents have picked for you.
Hmm. It is interesting how the relationship between parent and youth makes such a difference when it comes to matters of faith. In the other book that we were looking at from Kinnaman, You Lost Me, what's the premise of this?
Dave Kinnaman's the president of the Barna Group, and he wanted to look and see what specifically was going on when we have people who have problems with Christianity and end up leaving in some way, shape, or form. And he found out that there's a large number of a dropout or fallout is what he calls it.
Mm-hmm.
And then those people who have fallen out have identified themselves with three specific titles. Nomads,
mm-hmm.
those who are continuing to consider themselves Christian, but have disaffiliated themselves with a specific congregation or church involvement.
That's a big word, disaffiliated.
Yeah, sorry.
You're allowed to use big words. You just have to explain them.
They've just walked away from established religion and said, hey, I still believe in Jesus. I'm still a Christian, but I don't want anything to do with this established religion, like what we talked about a minute ago.
Which is interesting because that's far from what Jesus describes as the faithful life, the Christian life.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking with Reverend Stephen Cholak from LCMS Youth Ministry about various issues and trends in youth. And if you'd like to join the conversation today, you can do so. In St. Louis, the number is 314-821-0850, or outside of St. Louis, 1-800-730-2727, or you can email your questions to family@kfuo.org. Now, we talked about nomads. Prodigals?
Prodigals are those who leave. They're gone. It's over with. They don't want anything to do with the Christian church anymore. They don't consider themselves Christian, and they're not associated with a religious organization. And then the third is exiles, those who continue to call themselves Christian and in some way, shape, or form still involve themselves some way with an established religious organization, but they feel that they're stuck between culture or perhaps science and faith. So what do I do? I don't see the connection. And how do I do this? I can't get out. Ah.
So they find themselves stuck because of a particular issue, like you said, science. So maybe evolution or homosexuality.
Abortion.
Abortion, yeah, as we were talking earlier. So all of these, they're finding themselves with a matter of conscience and stuck between a rock and a hard place.
Right.
So nomads, prodigals, and exiles are the three categories that they've used these to identify where those who are lost, in a sense, are.
There's an interesting connection between those two books that we've mentioned now, that both authors find that there is a lack of some sort of vocabulary base or educational grammar foundation for these people who end up falling out. So that when, for example, they get into a discussion, maybe at university, they've left for college, they get into a conversation with somebody about their faith, and this person's not a Christian, and start asking them questions about their faith, and they don't have the vocabulary or the necessary logic or rhetoric to put it together so that they can respond, and they fall in on themselves and say, oh no, I couldn't answer this question. I don't know. Maybe it's not true. And then these other problems ensue.
So the faith of young people, especially those who are in these lost categories, they're not equipped to articulate what they believe.
Exactly.
As you said, they don't have the grammar, the rhetoric. Everything is based on what they believe is primarily based on feeling, is what I'm hearing you say.
Yeah.
And what's the word I'm looking for? it's not deeply rooted. It's not sustainable.
Right.
It fluctuates if it's rooted primarily in emotion or feeling.
Both of these authors and even a whole host of other people have talked about this particular problem where we get this. Okay, what? We may associate with our parents' religion, we may have specific ideas about God, but we generally see that all people in this sort of section water things down to what scientists have a name for. Therapeutic.
Moralistic therapeutic deism. Yes, is the term that I think it was that the term that Christian Smith coined, moralistic therapeutic deism. That's a mouthful. What does it mean? Moralistic therapeutic deism.
Yeah.
This is what they've used to describe the religiosity of American teens, if you will. It's not necessarily it's kind of taking the place of Christianity among teens. But it's far different than a historic faith.
This is an external name that they don't call themselves this.
True.
And they end up still identifying with Christianity, even though this is their quote-unquote creed. And here's what Christian Smith identifies or defines this particular moralistic therapeutic deism as. First, a God exists who created and orders the world and watches over human life on earth. So there is a God.
Mm-hmm.
He created things. He watches over it. Two, God wants people to be good, nice, and fair to each other as taught in the Bible and by most other worldly religions. Okay. Nice, good, and fair.
Sure. That's what we learn in kindergarten.
Mm-hmm. You know, keep your
nice.
Hands to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Color in the lines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Be fair.
Three, the central goal of life is to be happy and to feel good about oneself.
Again, probably what we learn in kindergarten.
Right. Not necessarily anything wrong with these things, like from a human standpoint.
Right.
biblically, however.
It raises some questions, yeah.
Four, God does not need to be particularly involved in one's life except when God is needed to resolve a problem. Now, here's where we're starting to put the icing on the cake. I can go about my life. I can continue to do the things that I want to do. And when I need God, he'll come and help me. And then when I'm done, I'll put him back on the shelf and go about my life.
So he's like the big, like the magic genie or the vending machine. Rub the lamp, or I push the button and to get what I want.
Right.
And if I don't get what I want, then what?
Well, and then you become a nomad, a prodigal, or an exile, right? Maybe. I don't know. Interesting.
So go ahead.
The last one. Good people go to heaven when they die. Okay.
How did he come to these five statements, if you will?
As he dumped all of his data together, I think he looked at some of these really odd parallels that started to surface and connected the dots that direction. And it seems to be maybe a postmodern view that's coming through. Things that are showing up at the university level and so on and so forth. But he's just looking at comparatively between the religions, between the denominations and really their parents, the difference between their parents and them.
But these statements really came out of his research from students, from teens who identified as mainline American Christians.
Right. Yeah. That's the craziness about the whole thing.
And these are just summaries. These aren't statements that students themselves wrote, but these are summaries of basically the research that he found on from students who identified as American Christians.
Exactly. And so this is striking for us, I think, because we know the God of Holy Scripture, the God who reveals himself in his Son, Jesus Christ, to not be about a guy who's just worried about you being nice and coloring within the lines, but rather that he has sent his Son, this Jesus Christ, to completely flip your world on its nose. That now, instead of being in darkness and in death, he moves you all the way to the other spectrum, as far as east is from the west, to life and light.
So Jesus died on the cross to make me happy, to make sure that I'm happy forever?
No. Now, is that a side kind of perk once you get in heaven? Well, I think you're going to be happy in heaven. Does that have implications to your life here on earth? Yeah, we're not always happy. And there's a number of things that happen and are inflicted upon us because of where we are and who we are, that would make us question these kind of things. And that's one of the other problems that we see.
The description of youth that, you know, the beliefs of American Christian youth that you just provided, those statements, looks right past statements, scriptures that say, you know, Jesus said, in this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I've overcome this world. You know, it looks right past the fact. Consider it all joy, my brothers, when others persecute you.
Right. Revile you, speak all sorts of lies against you. You know.
Yeah. It looks right past that. What does this mean then for us as parents, as church workers, as youth? What does this mean for our high school students, for our college students, for our middle school students? You know, these are trends these are cultural trends. Mm-hmm. What does this mean for us?
Well, I think there's a really important built-in sort of thing here that God creates, Jesus creates, he pulls together his church, and it has this oddity about it that it's a community. I love the imagery from 1 Peter, that you are living stones being brought together to be a spiritual house. So he's gathering all of us together, and maybe you're limestone and you're brick, but he's pulling us all together and making a house out of us. And then Paul uses the imagery of the body. You know, somebody's an eye, somebody's an ear, somebody's a hand and a pinky, and you need it all together to make it all work. And so we take that community, and mm-hmm. we're also blessed with another one. We have our Christian community, or our church congregation community, and we have our family, or those that we go to home and eat dinner with and all those kind of things.
Hopefully.
Yeah, exactly. That we can then receive gifts in the midst of that community and talk about specific things that show up in the Word of God.
What about... So community, community in the body of Christ, in our families at home, those are important. What about the relationship between youth and adults?
Yeah, this is seems to be strained. And I noticed you asked a question earlier of Laura Davis from Lutherans for Life. Is there going to be a component of the conference where the youth get to mix with the adults? There's been a whole bunch of great study and talk about intergenerational ministry. And that's really not just that there are old people, middle-aged people, and young adults and youth in the same room, but that they interact with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And really, this is what we find to be the case with the church, is that Christ wants us to interact with each other. And this is really the incarnational moment, isn't it? Which God comes and deems it necessary that he actually live with you and pull you all together, all ages, shapes, sizes, colors, languages, everything together, that you might build one another up. And when young adults and youth see older adults and even seniors and those retired or those in nursing homes or senior centers, and they look up to them, and when they are comfortable asking questions and feeling that they can confide in them, they tend to learn some things that make them more confident when they go out into the world and meet these doubts and challenges.
So what they're learning in their relationships with mature Christians or older Christians equips them to articulate their faith out in the rest of the world, especially among their peers.
Right. Especially among their peers, yeah.
With about, I know our time is winding down here, with about a little under 2 minutes. I know you have some other points that we wanted to get to. What is most important based on the conversation we've had thus far? What is it you really want us to know as we walk away from this conversation today about trends among youth?
Yeah, our youth are really important part of us. Not to be ignored or thought that they need to be shuffled off to a different room, or that they don't get us, or that their questions aren't important. It's very important for us to engage with them and to talk to them about the things that are bothering them. A lot of youth think that they can't doubt Christianity, and that they can't ask about their doubts in public. They're scared of those kind of things, and we need to actually engage them. Gather around the Word and the sacraments, and build one another up with those real, tangible things. And God knows that these are real things. He suffered these things. He wants us to know that we can talk about homosexuality and abortion and euthanasia and all these kind of things. These aren't things that need to be just swept under the rug. And we can talk about them together and be okay.
We can talk about them, and we need to talk about them, because there are topics that are being talked about out in the public arena, and so our young people need to be equipped to talk about them. And what better place to do that than in the family and in the church?
Right. Exactly. This is just key. Dynamite. Incarnational theology. We have a God who comes to dwell among us.
Absolutely.
And for our sorrows, for our pain, for our death, for our sin.
Amen. He came to dwell among us, to take on all of this as well, to take on our sin. Pastor Cholak, it has been good talking with you. I'm sorry our time is short, but it's been good talking with you today. Thanks for being with us.
Good talking to you too. God bless.
Coming up tomorrow on Faith and Family, we're going to revisit the topic of scouting and the announcements and changes in policy for the Boy Scouts of America. We'll talk with, revisit our conversation from August, and also talk with Reverend Bart Day from the Office of National Mission. Next week, Veterans Week on Faith and Family. We're going to talk with veterans, hear their stories about family life and faith, what it means to be a veteran today. Thanks for joining us for Faith and Family. It's been good to be with you. God's blessings on your day. Coming up next, Moments of Assurance, right here on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.